Hello there.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
So this is the latest installment of the Week in Blog. As we have started doing, we are mixing in guest commentators outside of myself and Con Carroll. This week, well, I'll introduce myself again. Bill Scher from Campaign for America's Future and LiberalOasis.com. And Bill, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, I am Bill Butler. So this is the All Bill edition of Blogging Heads. I work for and I'm broadcasting from the international headquarters of New Media Strategies, which is in my employer in Rosslyn, Virginia. I write the blog BlogPI. That's at blogpi.net if you care to click over. And I have maybe some interest. In a past job, I wrote the Blogometer before Con Carroll did. He came and replaced me after I left. So that's there's a bit of a connection that probably explains why I'm here today.
Excellent. So you've had great experience in reading copious amounts of blogs in a given week and actually trying to make sense of them.
Back when I wrote the Blogometer, like Con did, I had to read copious amounts of blogs every day starting at 6 a.m. and put together a few thousand word roundup by about 11 a.m. And these days, I don't read as many blogs as I do, but I definitely try to stay current with what's happening. And hopefully I'm current enough to offer some intelligent debate today.
Okay. Well, one topic that I think sparked both of our interests, there was some back and forth between John McCain and Barack Obama on negotiating with Iran. And what particularly struck me...
And the press, too.
And the press.
Yes, go ahead.
And that's what struck both of us. You had Time Magazine's Joe Klein press McCain in a press conference about whether Obama's past statements about negotiating with the leaders of Iran necessarily meant the president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, because anyone who knows the Iranian government knows that the president of Iran is not the leader of Iran. It's the supreme leader, Ayatollah. I'm going to totally botch the supreme leader's last name, I'm sure. Let's just say the supreme leader,
it's
the Ayatollah.
Khamenei?
I think that's right.
Khamenei. Yeah. I want to say Khamenei because that was the previous supreme leader, and the names are spelled almost the same.
Right.
But Khamenei, I'm pretty sure. Okay.
So when Joe Klein pressed him, McCain
wouldn't
budge and insisted that Ahmadinejad was the leader.
Let's back up a second here because what Joe Klein first pressed McCain on was whether or not Barack Obama had ever said that he would meet with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And it's about, you know, within hours of Joe Klein's blog post going up where he said that he had tapped the crack research team at Time Magazine, and they had reported back to him that that Obama had never said he would meet with Ahmadinejad. Conservative bloggers, especially Michael Goldfarb at the Weekly Standard, had come up with video of Obama last September. This is when Ahmadinejad spoke at Columbia University. In the video, Obama name-checks Ahmadinejad several times as the leader of Iran that we should be talking to.
I watched that video, and I did not come away with the same impression that Michael Goldfarb did. When Barack Obama was asked at the CNN YouTube debate whether he would meet the leaders of Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, I don't think Syria was
right. At that time, he didn't.
North Korea. And so Ahmadinejad was not in that question, and Obama said, "Yes, I would." And there are other examples that
to which Obama has elaborated on since then.
And there are other examples that conservative bloggers have pointed to where Ahmadinejad's name is involved in the answer that he's giving, but it's not part of the pledge of who he would specifically meet with in the first year of his term. So, I mean, you could say it's reasonable you might have come away with that impression, but I think it's fair for Obama to say, I have not committed to meeting with that individual person in the course of my first year of office. I'm committed to meeting with the leadership of Iran in some fashion after, as he has said, some preparation with lower level contacts. So there is, I understand what conservatives are trying to do here, but I don't think they have nailed them on this one.
Well, every time Obama has spoken about Iran, he always talks about Ahmadinejad. If Obama has ever said the name Khamenei before, then that would be news to me. There's even a press release they released earlier this year, which specifically referred to Ahmadinejad as the dictator of Iran. And so I wonder that if Obama had been asked the same question by Joe Klein, who's the leader of Iran, and unfortunately we'll never know the exact answer because now he's certainly going to be prepared for it. Would he have known? Because Khamenei, I don't believe, shows up in any well-known public statements, certainly.
Well, I think previously, and I just want to backtrack a little bit just to give a flavor of how this percolated up in the blogosphere. Because after Joe Klein had that press conference, he blogged about it on Swampland. Huffington Post then got the video of the news conference put up there, giving it an extra platform. And it's an interesting example to me as to how, there are plenty of bloggers in the past that have pointed out the fact that Ahmadinejad is not the leader of Iran, myself included. It's never made it into the mainstream media before. And that's why you've had, I think, a lot of politicians somewhat as a default reaction, sort of accepting the way the media has portrayed it, the way a lot of conservatives have elevated Ahmadinejad to be the leader, which they did not do when there was a more reformist president of Iran, Khatami. They used to downplay him as not really being in charge 4 years ago. So a lot of politicians...
And that may be because Khatami was not really Khamenei's guy, whereas I think Ahmadinejad is much closer to Khamenei's way of thinking.
Well, there's a whole debate about that. I would not say
there is a whole debate about that. That's true. But I think it's interesting that what Joe Klein does in that Swampland post is rather than I think you just said a moment ago that Ahmadinejad is being raised up. Well, he's being Joe Klein specifically lowers him down, as does a post that I know that we both read in the past few days over at Democracy Arsenal. Elon Goldberg might be the author's name. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. May have that slightly wrong. But in both one of Joe Klein says that Ahmadinejad has no power in foreign policy issues, and the Democracy Arsenal post says he has very little power in foreign policy issues. First of all, notwithstanding the fact that Ahmadinejad is the person you have to go through if you want to get to Khamenei. In the United States, our head of state and our head of government is one person. It's the president. In a lot of other countries, especially parliamentary systems, and Iran is kind of a version of that, they have a head of state and a head of government. The head of state is Khamenei. The head of government is Ahmadinejad. And
that's still oversimplifying it. I mean, I don't know if you recall when, Ahmadinejad...
No, I can be more specific, too. Like specifically, the foreign policy of Iran is run by the Supreme National Security Council, and the person who sits at the head of that is Khamenei. However, the other main person is the president, and the president appoints all the other people who are on that commission. And the supreme leader eventually will see. He doesn't necessarily make the policy. They kind of try to arrive at consensus, and then once the supreme leader has given his say-so, then it becomes policy that can be promulgated. So I think that Joe Klein and the Democracy Arsenal are both downplaying Ahmadinejad. I'm a little mystified as to why. I guess it's because Obama said he'd speak with him.
Well, there's a good reason why. I mean, there's not necessarily a single pipeline or chain of command that leads up to the supreme leader. Take for consideration, I don't know if you recall when Ahmadinejad wrote this famous letter to George Bush.
I do, yeah.
Where George and trying to, I forget what was actually in it, was some of this of a rambling letter, and George Bush dismissed it by saying, well, he said nothing about what he would do about the nuclear program, so I'm not going to take this letter seriously. Well, the same week, a spokesperson for the Supreme Leader had published an article on Time Magazine's website, laying out the contours of a negotiated agreement which included intrusive inspections. And that was completely ignored by the White House and ignored by much of the media, because there's been this sense that Ahmadinejad is the guy, when someone else had put himself out there for Western consumption to say, hey, I'm actually the guy, or I can be the guy. I'm actually a conduit to the supreme leader here. And I think you're right, and I'm sure Obama and many other politicians, I'm sure, kind of felt like, yeah, there's no way I'm ever going to explain that Ahmadinejad is not really the leader. It's going to be such a heavy lift. So let's just talk about it in that context. But now you have, not just because it's bubbled up from, you know, the intersection of the media and the blogosphere, that you had Obama's foreign policy advisor Susan Rice at MSNBC pick up on what was happening in the blogosphere, push the point to say McCain is not properly depicting what's going on in Iran, going at McCain's foreign policy credentials. And so now the Obama campaign can fully recalibrate to say, what I'm talking about does not necessarily mean meeting with Ahmadinejad directly, and show that I actually have more foreign policy knowledge than McCain has been offering to you.
Well, it's definitely in the Obama campaign's interest to portray McCain as, you know, not being as on the ball as McCain would like everybody to think he is, as I think the current perception of McCain is. And so I expect them to push more stories like this. This is just the beginning of it.
And so go to your other, because you were saying you don't understand why Joe Klein would be downplaying this, and I think there's a reason why. I think it's a pushback against what people feel the neoconservatives have done in elevating Ahmadinejad and treating him like the sole conduit, which makes it much, much harder to make a domestic case for direct diplomacy, because Ahmadinejad says so many crazy things. Often when you're having a debate about diplomacy, the question is, are you dealing with a rational actor or an irrational actor? You elevate Ahmadinejad, it really seems like you're dealing with an irrational actor, when in fact there are at least some rational actors within the Iranian government that one could deal with.
I suppose. We may be reaching the limit of how familiar I am with the situation. I mean, just for my own self, I'll speak. I think that there is a middle path between what Bush has done, which has been not open enough, and between what Obama has said he'd do, and that is basically what seems to me like put the prestige of the presidency out there front of the line. You know, Obama has said that he's, you know, he'll meet without preconditions. Now, he's dialed that back a little bit and said that, you know, that he need to have benchmarks first. And additionally, I think Obama has, you know, he's made a few gaffes in the last couple of days. We've talked mostly about the Joe Klein article, which is definitely interesting to me. Then when Obama this past week was in my hometown, Portland, Oregon, and he said that Iran
was... Were you sad you weren't at the rally?
What was that again?
Were you sad you weren't at the big Portland rally?
You know, one of my favorite bands, the Decemberists, played at that rally, so I kind of wish I'd been there for that. And I had friends who went to it, and there were, some 75,000 people there. A friend of mine who was at the rally reported back that some bloggers on the some commenters on a Washington Post blog had claimed that the crowd photos were photoshopped. There weren't really 75,000 people there. Look, if you look at the back of the crowd, there's, you know, those people were digitally manipulated, and the photo looks completely normal. So I think that's people will look for, you know, people look for anything. But you know, as far as Obama at the rally, he said that Iran was not a grave threat because, unlike Soviet Union, it didn't have the same reach. It wasn't the same. It wasn't power on the same level. And then a few days later, he turned around and said that, in fact, Iran was a grave threat, and he'd take them seriously. I'm curious. I assume you're familiar with both of the situations. Are those not a contradiction? They do seem like a contradiction to me.
Well, this has been pushed by a lot of conservative bloggers. Michelle Malkin did a big column that she put up on her blog called "Obama Being a Gaffe Machine," where she dug back into the past 2 years to try to cherry pick various things and make them look like take some minor incidents and make them out of molehills, or take things that are not incidents at all and make them into incidents. And I think with this particular question about how he describes Iran as a threat, when he called Iran a tiny threat compared to the Soviet Union as a threat to us. And
are you sure he didn't say Iran is not a serious threat? I believe that's the exact phrase. I should have brought that with me, but I didn't bring it with me.
I thought the word he used was tiny, but my recollection of the context of the statement was, in comparison to the Soviet Union, as a direct threat to the United States, as opposed to Iran being a regional threat or a threat of nuclear proliferation or what have you. And I do think that Obama recognized that there was a glibness in that characterization that sent the wrong message, which is why the next day he wanted to make very clear that he does believe it to be a grave threat. But I don't believe it's a question of threat to whom. John Kyle was on MSNBC soon after this, pushing this point. Actually got corrected by Contessa Brewer on the spot, saying, hey, you're quoting Obama out of context. And maybe this brings up a question of conservatives' views.
And John Kyle said,
liberals in the media.
Not a serious threat?
But Kyle's response to her was, Obama always brings up Ronald Reagan here, but Ronald Reagan believed in peace through strength. And I think what Obama was trying to say there was, we are extremely strong relative to Iran. You know, there's a far greater disparity of strength in these two countries than there's the Soviet Union, and yet we spoke to the Soviet Union and didn't make a big to-do about it.
This is where conservative bloggers chimed in, suggesting that maybe Obama didn't quite understand the nature of his asymmetrical warfare. That it doesn't take an apparatus such as the Soviet Union, where they have their own interests to protect that smaller countries, don't necessarily, and that it doesn't. Well, that's more to the point. It doesn't take so much money or effort to not effort. It doesn't take so much money or organization to cause a whole lot of damage against a large state with infrastructure and interests around the world. And I think that's where Obama does send the wrong message by saying that they're not a threat, and he was right to pull it back. But I think it's still unclear what his position really is.
Well, I think the position is clear. He takes the threat of Iran becoming a nuclear power seriously. He wants that to be stopped. He doesn't want them to become nuclear. He feels that not talking to them over the past 8 years has not diminished their ability to go nuclear. And if we're going to actually stop it, you're going to have to sit down at the table and work out a deal. And he's laid out the contours of that deal, which is you don't go nuclear. You help out in Iraq. You don't. You stop supporting anti-Israel groups, and we'll normalize relations with you and give you some economic assistance. And that's a deal that was laid out by Iranian diplomats in 2003, the so-called Grand Bargain, that we learned about from Flint Leverett, who was a former Bush administration official, and the Bush administration snubbed it. This is before Ahmadinejad even came on the scene as president. So I think it's quite clear the type of deal Obama wants to negotiate. And it's not as if he is saying, I think Iran is not a threat, who cares, let's not bother talking to them, let's not even bother worrying about them. He's just making the point that we've had bigger existential threats to America's direct security before, and we handled that through negotiations in the past. So why shouldn't we deal with it with a smaller country, much smaller military? He didn't get into the asymmetrical warfare component of it. Not too many presidential candidates get into that level of detail on the stump. Well, I'm quite sure he's aware of the concept. It's not all that strange to the average senator. But just because asymmetrical warfare exists doesn't mean we don't have a lot of leverage, a lot of military strength to bring to the table and ensure that we can get a good deal from them. Again, sorry if we had a little bit of a blip there. We had some battery issues. But I was rambling on and on about Iran, trying to make the point that there's a difference between a country that can directly wipe you off the face of the map, is the phrase of choice these days, like the Soviet Union could, multiple times over during the Cold War, and a case of Iran that at best has some asymmetrical warfare options against us, but If you believe that they're a fundamentally irrational government, as I do, they would know that they would get pretty crushed if they tried that on us, and really haven't to date. Therefore,
There was a Charles Krauthammer column about a month ago that does not seem to have been very influential, and that kind of surprises me. The title of it escapes me, but it was something about the end of the non-proliferation era. And the thesis of his column, which conservative bloggers largely did not pick up, where they do pick up, do pick up things he writes other times. His argument was that the game is over. Iran is going to get nukes, whether we try to bribe them not to or not. And the better thing to do is to promise them that if they do use nuclear weapons they acquire, especially if they try to destroy Israel, then they will be absolutely destroyed. That missile defense, we will make sure, we'll guarantee them that none of their missiles will get out, or maybe 1 out of 10 will. But then we promise you all of our missiles will make it to your country. And that's interesting because it certainly is a very hawkish view, no doubt.
I missed the start of you talking. Okay. Skype got funky. Who was making that argument?
Oh, it was Charles Krauthammer. Krauthammer in the Washington Post. And, so it's definitely a hawkish argument, but it's also one that, I think neither side is willing to embrace yet. But I think he may be right. I think that there may not be a lot of good in trying to negotiate with Iran, because I think Iran, and not that we shouldn't open up more dialogue with them than we have already, as I said earlier, but that I think it's a fool's errand to think we're going to persuade them that they shouldn't, that they're not going to get nukes. I think they are going to. I think it's a matter of time whether we try to buy them off or not.
Well, let's pivot to I want to get back to
sure.
Michelle's Obama gaffes piece, and that got pretty well launched in the conservative blogosphere. I even heard Tony Blankley mm-hmm. referencing it on MSNBC.
It's the best roundup I've seen yet of all the little things that Obama has said over the past year that kind of leave you scratching your chin. Wondering, what did he mean there? Go ahead. Sorry.
So it struck me on a couple of levels. I mean, one, mm-hmm. this is sort of a fresh narrative that and conservatives have been very adept at manufacturing these narratives that stick to Democratic candidates, and they're trying to pin the elitist snob tag on Obama for the last few weeks. And I wonder if this was sort of a tacit admission that wasn't sticking like the way their stuff normally does, and they had to try something fresh. And secondly, I don't see this one getting picked up very much in the media, and is that feeding the sense of conservative bloggers that, whether they believe it sincerely or not, I don't know, but trying to promulgate the notion that the media is in the tank for Obama. And as Red State said, when Linda Douglas, the National Journal, decided to take a position mm-hmm. in the Obama campaign, I'll get mm-hmm. the exact wording here. We must be vigilant against the media now. If you didn't think so before, you need to realize it now. The media is Obama's mistress. The media is going to whore itself out to the Obama campaign and paint John McCain as badly as they possibly can, all while ignoring Obama's gaffes and utter lack of experience and judgment, which struck me as very amnesiatic how the media has treated McCain for the past 10 years.
How about Joe Klein going after McCain just this past week? Was that part of the free ride that McCain's getting?
Oh, it was certainly not, and kudos to Joe Klein. But I don't think you could say that the sweep of the media has been to pound McCain. I mean, over the past 2 months, Obama's had some of the worst media coverage he's had of his entire life. No one has had
media coverage in his life.
No one has been forced to play guilt by association with their pastor in politics, I think, ever, of their personal pastor, their personal faith be put in a political lens that way. Folks have talked about things like, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, political figures in the evangelical movement, but I don't think anyone's had their own personal pastor treated in the same way as Obama has had. whereas McCain had a free ride in the past couple of months because the spotlight's not been on him. But he has had extremely favorable media treatment through much of his career ever since the 2000 race, if not before. And whether that changes now as this reaches that level, you know, we'll see. But it strikes me as very strange to think that the media is going to be utterly slanted to Obama, considering that the media has had a far longer and deeper relationship with McCain to this point.
I think that what's more likely is that the media love affair with McCain is something that was true about 8 years ago, but a lot has happened in between then. And if the media is still in love with McCain, then you know why did the New York Times run that story about Vicky Eisman a few months ago? I think maybe it could be because you and some of your allies have had a little bit of success in working the reps yourselves over the past couple of years, and now the media, you know, they've definitely heard the allegation that they're giving McCain, or they have given McCain, a free ride. And for the 2008 race, I think it's pretty likely and already is happening that they are overcompensating for where they may have been a little bit too in love with him in the past. And I think Obama is, you're right, he has had the worst press coverage of his life in the past couple months, but he still has, I would still say, the tenor of commentary, certainly on the cable news channels, and on the editorial pages, are all still very pro-Obama. It's more that this is unfair that's happening to him. They're asking the same questions you are. Linda Douglas herself said that, you know, Linda Douglas, who recently left my old employer, National Journal, to go to the Obama campaign.
Have you had personal, professional interaction with her?
No, she joined in 2007. I left in 2006. So none whatsoever. I've never met her or don't know her. She was on, I think it was, Reliable Sources with Howard Kurtz earlier in the month, and I somewhere here I have several quotes of her saying that it's a bridge too far to judge Obama based on who his pastor is, and she has a bit of a history of this going back to her history when she was working for ABC News. She reported on Webster Hubbell and Mickey Cantor, who were friends, and only eventually recused herself from once Webb Hubbell was indicted. Then she recused herself at that point, if I understand it correctly. And in this case, too, I wonder, like, don't you think that she's probably been giving advice to the Obama campaign a little bit on the side? I don't think they hired her out of the blue. Do you?
I, from what I understand, she had some very recent conversations with friends of hers on the campaign the last couple of weeks. I highly doubt she's been back-channeling with the campaign over the stretch of months while she was reporting on the campaign. You know, she's never had a reputation of being a biased reporter until today. She's always been considered she hasn't even been that...
I don't think the spotlight was on her in this way until today.
Right. Well, that's right. That's right. I mean, she's never really...
Media Research Center, which publishes Newsbusters, and I don't have this post with me, but Newsbusters put up a post in the last couple of days that was a whole string of greatest hits from Linda Douglas, quoting her, saying, and I don't actually have this, quoting her on This Week in 2000, shortly after Bush was elected, and saying that he hadn't demonstrated his commitment to minorities because he hadn't committed to new federal spending on minority programs. There's a lot of those things like that in her career. It's not hard to identify her as left-leaning, as sympathetic to Democrats. Of course, she also, in April 2007, she coached Obama before a debate. This is after she left ABC and before she was hired by National Journal. So, she hasn't really been that high-profile a figure until about now, and that's why we haven't seen the same thing.
I have not. You know, the Media Research Center is not an organization that I cite blindly. I see a lot of cherry-picking and quoting out of context from those guys, so I never take their stuff at face value.
Well, they're not as good at promoting themselves as Media Matters are. I have to give Media Matters that much.
Well, Media Matters tends to put full transcripts of things up, so you can at least judge for yourself.
That's not that I've read a lot of Media Matters, and they do selectively excerpt as well.
I'm more interested in the conservative blogger motivation here. Is it that they are they trying to work the refs themselves because they're concerned that McCain's going to get a raw deal? They don't have faith in
course.
The media,
of course.
I've talked to cons sometimes, and there seems to be still a split in the conservative movement about how deeply they want to back McCain, how much they really want to get him in the White House, or to what extent they think he's a sure loser and rather see the blame be put on him and not on conservatives. So is there an element here of trying to keep the liberal media bias meme going, regardless of what it actually means to the – I'm sorry?
I said the liberal media bias meme will keep itself going. I think conservative bloggers need to keep it alive.
If we do this again, I guarantee you between now and the next time we talk, there will be at least one piece that is completely biased towards McCain. I highly doubt we're going to see a campaign where every media piece we slant to Obama and, oh, poor McCain can't get a fair deal. I mean, he got such generous coverage about this 100 years stuff. It was striking to me. Even though people repeatedly quote himself and say he wants to keep troops there for 100 years, wants a permanent military presence there.
Which is not the full context of the statement.
Actually, it's exactly the full context of the statement. The context of the statement is he wants to have a presence, military presence in Iraq akin to Korea and Japan, which is effectively a permanent presence. I mean, that's his policy.
Is that he would be fine with that. It was not necessarily that there absolutely must be. But look, he's committed to making sure that Iraq becomes stable. And if it means maintaining a presence similar to that in Korea and Germany, then he's for that. Whereas Barack Obama has said he will pull troops out regardless of what he's hearing from generals on the ground. And even Samantha Power, who is no longer his foreign policy aide, contradicted him on that. So I think it's very difficult to tell. This goes in line with Iran again. It's very difficult to tell what Obama actually thinks or means.
Well, we can debate Obama's Iraq policy. I'd point out that when Obama's been in debates, he has been grilled on the subject of what he would do in Iraq, specifically on that point. Whereas there's a legitimate debate to be had about is wanting or being comfortable with signaling that you are fine with 100-year military presence in Iraq, is that a sound foreign policy objective?
I think it's a realistic point of view to take. But as he realized that was not necessarily popular with a lot of people, then you saw his 2013 speech. I think it was just last week he's not planning to fight longer than we have to. He will fight as long as we have to.
I don't think it's an illegitimate argument to make that a permanent military presence is a good idea. I disagree with it fervently, and I'm happy to have the debate. My only from the media question is when Democrats try to point that out and make the argument, hey, we think 100-year military presence is going to give you 100 years of war because it's a fundamentally destabilizing foreign policy objective. The McCain folks, conservative bloggers, whined in the media. And got their way. You had several articles that will just say, as a matter of fact, that Democrats are distorting what McCain says, when in fact they haven't been. They have a difference of opinion of what a 100-year military presence will bring.
Well, I will say what the Obama campaign and what Democratic strategists said when they went after McCain's 100-year quote is they were definitely overbroad in their way of depicting it, and that's why the media did respond to that one.
McCain
try to make too blunt of a point?
Was McCain overbroad when he said Obama and Clinton want to surrender in Iraq?
Remind me of where that quote exactly was when he said that.
I believe he said Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton want to surrender in Iraq. I don't think it was all that complicated.
Was it that simple? Okay. Well, he also saying bomb Iran. So he's I don't know.
I've never seen the media once.
Well, I mean, hey, look. Okay, all right.
That's unfair.
Obama Obama has basically said he wants to surrender in Iraq. No, if his goal is unilateral withdrawal, well, unilateral withdrawal, whether we win or not, right? That seems to be
surrender is telling a singular enemy, "You won, I lost." That's not the situation in Iraq. Now, if Republicans want to make the argument, again, if you want to make the argument,
so it's declare victory and go home.
If you want to make the argument that unilateral withdrawal or gradual withdrawal is equivalent to surrendering, you know, fine, make the argument. But that is, in my mind, you're characterizing the Democratic position in that way. You're characterizing the Democratic position in that way. That is your opinion of what the Democratic position is. It is the Democratic opinion that 100-year military presence is akin to 100 years of war and is fundamentally destabilizing. Have that argument. Have the media flesh out those opinions. That's fine. But have a consistent standard here. I don't think the media has had a consistent standard towards McCain and Obama on that subject, which only bellies the point that the media is not uniformly, singularly in the tank for Obama.
Well, the nature of the debate has been very mad, Chan, because on one hand we have leave immediately. On the other hand, we apparently have 100 years of war. And, you know, obviously Democrats don't want to have their position characterized as surrender. They don't mean for it to be surrender. They see it as being the prudent, you know, policy at this point. However, I think more attention needs to be paid to successes that are happening on the ground. I'm on an email list from the military, and you probably wouldn't take them as the most reliable sources in this case. But coming from Petraeus claims that last week was the least violent week in Iraq for the past 4 years, and that for the week coming up to end, the violence is likely to be even lower than that. I think, given that circumstance, we should continue the policy more or less as we are now. And I think the problem is neither candidate can really talk about, you know, a nuanced policy. It's either we have to stake it out and we have to leave, which is definitely what the left is asking for. I don't want to get into the point where I'm saying declare victory and go home, but we've seen a lot of successes, and I think if this continues, I think certainly by 2013, maybe even by sooner, we're probably reaching a point of diminishing returns, where there's not a great deal more we can do for Iraq, because it's never going to become California, at least not in the next 100 years. And so I think both candidates have a hard time kind of stepping back and being a little more realistic about it, partly with the media there, partly with their own supporters, you know, trying to keep them, stick them to a certain position. Does that make sense to you?
It does. I don't agree with it top to bottom, but I see where you're coming from.
Sure.
Perhaps we should transition to a fresh topic, though.
Let's do. Why not?
We have left liberal bloggers hitting McCain on lobbyists in Hagee, flap over credentials of the Democratic Convention, and sexism in the Democratic primary. Anything? What do you want to prioritize?
I'm going to send the lobbyist one, because that's one where I'm not going to defend McCain in the slightest bit. So you might enjoy that.
Well, it only interests me in that, I mean, this is going back to, you know, our questions of liberal bloggers and Iran and the media role here. You know, over the last 15 years, we've seen conservative activists in talk radio and more recently in the blogosphere have a very easy ability to launch narratives in the mainstream media, to push, you know, manufactured scandals into the mainstream media, and liberals have felt very ineffectual. And you're starting to see more success. You had, for a couple weeks now, you've had, you know, Move On and Progressive Media USA, which is a new group. They have been really driving.
Brock, right?
I'm sorry?
Is that David Brock?
I think Brock's involved with that. I think Tom Matzey's involved with that.
Is that the one that announced they were shutting down? Because there was one that it did just announce that it would not be running ads. I thought that was David Brock's group.
Yes, they announced I don't know if they were closing up shop altogether, but I think they announced they weren't going to run ads in the way they were planning to. But they still have this McCain source website. They've really been pushing the lobbyist argument hard. Cliff Schechter, mm-hmm. who wrote the book Real McCain, has been drumming the lobbyist argument on his blog mm-hmm. to the point where McCain felt he had to react and implement mm-hmm. this new policy on active lobbyists in his campaign. He whacked, I think, three lobbyists, but that hasn't stopped the issue. Just this weekend,
no,
the Washington
Post... No, it actually has kept the issue going.
And the Washington Post ran a big expose on Charlie Block's his main campaign manager. He's one yep. of the biggest lobbyists in Washington, often representing... Yeah. often representing dictators of the human rights problems. And we'll see if this issue grows and grows and grows, but it certainly seems to be keeping around. And I don't know if it would have had the kind of legs it would. You know, cause when the New York Times did the story that you mentioned before, which is really
yeah,
more
yeah.
which is really more about his relationship with lobbyists than it was about any extramarital affair, although that was sort of the salacious hook of the article. Because
they did lead with the salacious hook, of course.
They did. And they got beat around for that. And
shot their own story in the foot, no question.
And so everyone kind of ignored the 7/8 of the article that dealt with his ties to lobbyists. And
right.
I think there was concern on the left that, hey, this was a potentially interesting issue to go out McCain with. It's now going to be obscured by some sloppy decisions on the part of the Times. Now it's
right.
been brought back, I think, in large part because of the fuel the blogosphere has given it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what's the conservative reaction to that? Is there some recognition that, you know, we've had a pretty good run of things, have being able to control the media narrative, or not? We're not having the same control of that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you mentioned earlier, that there's an issue where conservatives are not sure how much to support McCain. This is an issue where I think conservative bloggers think that McCain is responsible for his own problems here. There's a sense that, you know, this goes back to campaign finance reform, where his whole concern appeared to be, well, the appearance of impropriety was John McCain's big thing, almost to the exclusion of actual impropriety. A lot of the campaign finance stuff that is now illegal, there was never any clear sense that it was actually leading to corruption, but it was a compelling enough case that it went forward. Here's the same thing with lobbyists. McCain has painted the target on his own back. And, you know, I think, although it's not a popular position to say, like, look, everybody has a lobbyist. It's actually written into the Constitution that we have the right to petition our government. The people do. You know, the AARP represents a very, very large number of people, all the old people, basically. And so they have a right to do that. Conservatives would rather see, you know, the government not be in charge of so many programs to be lobbied. And so McCain, who incidentally would probably support that, is too much playing on the Democrats' turf, conceding the lobbyist issue, probably for the same reason he conceded campaign finance. I think that he never forgave himself for getting mixed up in the Keating Five way back when. Even though he was never, even though he was basically cleared of doing anything wrong, this is what turned him into a maverick. This is, in a way, this is what made him, you know, a compelling figure to run for president in 2000 in the first place. And so this is just another one of those things where Republicans, conservatives, don't, you know, are not going to stick up for McCain. I certainly can't look at this and say it's really all that noble. I suppose it's noble, but you know what? It's only really an issue because he made it one, and I had a good conclusion to that, but I lost it.
If you get it back, bring it back.
I will. So, yeah, I mean, once again, I didn't even have a conclusion for that either. So.
the other thing that was blog-driven this week was something about Reverend Hagee. Which Khan and I have talked about before. Khan has always mm-hmm. sort of shrugged it off. He did kind of the Jay-Z move on me when I bring it up. And I've always said, and this to some extent applies to lobbyists too, I'm against guilt by association attacks across the board.
Sure.
I'd be more than happy if neither side do them at all, and we stuck to the issues there. I don't think it's fair to say you – and this is what Charlie Black had said back in March when Pastor Wright came up. John McCain believes that the people who are Jewish, the people who are defriend you, you are not accountable for their views. And, you know, if McCain stuck with that and didn't start trafficking in the Bill Ayers stuff and get coy with the Reverend Wright stuff, he could have successfully made a media standard that wouldn't blow back on him when it comes to lobbyists or when it comes to Reverend Hagee. So this week you had Talk to Action, which is one of the preeminent blogs focusing on theocons and right-wing evangelical leaders, digs up an old sermon that Hagee did where he basically says God sent Hitler to do the Holocaust because not enough Jews were going to Israel. Now just get on Talk to Action. We had Huffington Post, you know, plays again, you know, as I think Politico mentioned, you know, Huffington Post has proven its influence, that stuff that percolates on blogs can gravitate there and get the wider area needs to make the jump into the mainstream media. This time, McCain apparently actually flinched and said, I can't abide by this, and then formally renounced the endorsement. Which again, I wonder if it's the same thing with the lobbyists. Does the act of renouncing it going to spark a round of conversation? Well, why is it this that you that brought your line as opposed to that, which when you call Catholics a great whore, that was bad but not so bad. We'll see, but from the blog perspective,
that actually raises the question. I assume you're familiar with David Korn, another blogging head, his reporting on Rod Parsley, who's another pastor, who's I believe that McCain sought in his endorsement. At the very least,
he's the one that McCain actually called a spiritual advisor, a spiritual guide.
Closer than Hagee is. Well, I'm surprised that I haven't seen more about it. Why do you think the Rod Parsley story hasn't gone anywhere yet?
I thought I saw a headline today that ABC did something on Parsley, but I didn't dig into it. It's a good question because you know the difference between Hagee and Parsley is Hagee is a straight up political endorsement. McCain never claimed to turn to Hagee for spiritual reasons. Parsley is someone that he actually described as a spiritual advisor, a spiritual guide, which is the way that people had interpreted the Obama-Wright relationship. Well, they both say that's really overstating it. He was my pastor, not my guru or spiritual advisor.
Let me add to actually continue your point here. I mean, maybe this is not quite your point, but the things that Hagee has said are of the what I would call wacky variety, where it's, you know, as you said, God sent Hitler to make the Jews move to Israel. That's kind of similar to Robertson and Falwell a few years ago saying that homosexuality and general depravity in the United States, you know, resulted in 9/11. And also, Hagee, the things he says, you really have to, like, sit there and listen for a few minutes before you start to figure out what he's saying. Whereas with Rod Parsley, Rod Parsley said he wants, it said that that Islam should be destroyed. That's a false religion. There you go. That is soundbite worthy. That is quotable. Yep. I'm surprised that they – why even bother with Hagee? Parsley is – maybe Hagee is setting the stage for later Rod Parsley news stories. That would make sense to me. You think that's what's happening?
I Skype conked out of me for a sec, so I missed the last part of what you said.
Okay. Oh, I'm asking, do you think that's what's happening? That Hagee is just a precursor for, now that it's become a bit of a story, Rod Parsley will now be an even bigger story than he was in the first place.
You know, I this is something I brought up with Khan in the past. I mean, in my mind, the worst guilt by association thing that McCain has is Richard Quinn, who's not a pastor at all. He's the owner of a racist neo-Confederate magazine called Southern Partisan, and he's been on McCain's campaign team since 2000. This is a guy he's had a long relationship with. This issue came up in 2000, and McCain shrugged it off and still pays the guy. That to me is a far deeper association than a particular endorsement or I mean, I know we call Parsley a spiritual advisor, but they can say, well, he wasn't a spiritual advisor for 20 years or what have you. But that hasn't made the news yet. I presume the difference is the matter of video. You have video of McCain with Hagee,
right,
doing their endorsement dance that you can run over and over again. And I don't know if there is that McCain Parsley video or not. There may be, and I'm just unaware of it.
The Hagee videos aren't really very good. That's why the Hagee videos, there's no goddamn America in the Hagee video.
I'm in video of McCain and Hagee together. I mean, video of McCain and Hagee together.
Video of them together. There is video of them together, but there's nothing terribly noteworthy about the video itself. Here's the endorsement. Thanks for the endorsement. That's all there is to that.
But I'm not sure you even have that video of McCain and Parsley.
Yeah, I don't think you do. The text is pretty incendiary by itself. So I'm surprised that that hasn't gotten more attention. I assume you're somewhat surprised as well.
A little surprised, but the way these things percolate, people have to prioritize. Who are you going to focus on? A lot of bloggers, for whatever reason, focused on Hagee. They mm-hmm. flogged it and flogged it and flogged it. They weren't getting too far with it. And it was petering out, and since finally Obama seemed to have got past the right, people were kind of letting it go. But then you had Talk to Action came up with something, came up with Scandal Gold, and people flocked to it again. So that's the only thing I can imagine. But we'll see if after McCain flinches, same with the lobbyists. Once you flinch, does this stuff they'll pile up on you if there's more out there? So maybe Parsley will become a bigger deal down the road. We'll see. But it strikes me that liberal bloggers are learning how to play this game and have more of an infrastructure than they had 5 years ago to get it done.
Definitely more infrastructure than 5 years ago. I really think around the 2004 election and after is when great new infrastructure that is more up to speed than the more tech savvy than the Republicans have. Have you read Matt Bai's The Argument?
I haven't actually. I've read some reviews of it, but I haven't read the actual book.
It's a very good book. Highly recommend it. I think the institutions he's described, there're definitely growing pains there, but earlier in the dialogue, to use that blogging heads word. We mentioned both Media Matters and Media Research Center. And, I have friends over at Media Research Center, and I definitely think that they produce some work that contributes to the debate. But I don't think that it is getting out there it's not getting out there the same way that Media Matters is, even though they probably both have credibility problems with their detractors and a little bit with the press. I see Media Matters being more successful and being more engaged with the blogosphere, with the liberal blogosphere, than Media Research Center is on the right. To some extent, that's the problem of theirs. To some extent, that is the prerogatives of individual conservative bloggers, which are different from the prerogatives, I think, of liberal bloggers. And I think at this point in time, the internet landscape certainly favors the left.
An interesting place. Should we end it on that note?
Maybe we should. We've been going for a while, I think. So it's been a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And hopefully we can do it again.
If you'll have me back, I will definitely do it again.
Excellent.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.